My name is Paloma, and you are listening to WGXC Acra
90.7 FM. On Thursday, May 11th, turn out for a public information session for WGXC Community Contributors Program. If you want to be on the radio at WGXC, now is your chance. Turn out at 6 p.m. Thursday, May 11th at the Kinderhook Memorial Library for an information session and a chance to find out how to get on the air at 90.7 FM. The WGXC Community Contributors Program is created to bolster Wavefarm's mission of participatory radio. We're looking for volunteer producers, programmers, and more to make segments to air in the primetime drive time hours on the station. It features reviews, stories, and more. If you'd like to interview local farmers or do restaurant reviews or have another idea for a short segment on the radio, please get in touch at content@wgxc.org or turn out May 11th at 6 p.m. at Kinderhook Memorial Library for a public information session about the WGXC Community Contributors Program. The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cochrane Media of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
You know, I was listening to the radio, and I heard this thing.
90.7 FM, listener-aided and abetted radio.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that the Hudson Police Department says they have an officer who lied in an incident report, drove with a suspended registration, and repeatedly left his post as a school resource officer at the Hudson Junior Senior High School to visit a woman in another county with whom he had an intimate relationship. That's all the internal affairs documents obtained by the Times Union say about Officer Jacob Hoffman. He was also found to have stashed four personal guns, including a loaded semi-automatic handgun and an unregistered pistol, in an unlocked locker in the vacant former Hudson police station. Currently, Hoffman is not on active duty because of an injury and has been disciplined multiple times in a few years. But a settlement agreement negotiated between the department and his police union that extends to 2024 allows police to terminate him immediately if he violates department policy. Hoffman could not be reached for comment. The Times Union obtained the police records through the state's Freedom of Information Law. In the documents, Hoffman admits to leaving his post as a school resource officer to meet the woman. Police learned of the incident because the woman's husband witnessed the visit and called them. According to the internal investigation, and I quote, Hoffman stated that he has been doing this once a week for a couple of months, with some weeks going twice, end quote. After the internal investigation, Hoffman was suspended without pay for 14 days for violating 10 departmental policies and received a letter of reprimand, but he is still on the Hudson Police Force. The story outlines other violations and transgressions of the police officer. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Jamal Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that Second Ward Hudson Supervisor Abdus Maya wants another term. Maya is running on the Democrat Party line. Maya has previously been a Hudson alderperson and said, and I quote, I encourage affordable housing and shelter arrangements for homeless people in the Galvin Civic Motel and work through a range of support services, including eviction prevention, emergency services, and transitional housing. I supported the satellite service at Bliss Towers to bring the Department of Social Services, Public Health, Human Services, and Office of the Aging, end quote. The story does not say if there are other candidates running for the same position. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Andrea Mako reports at Porcupine Soup that Facebook deleted the pages of the Greene County Sheriff's Office and American Legion Post 291 of Greenville this week, and some local folks are upset. Facebook is a private company, and when anyone posts anything there, they are turning over the information and contents to a giant corporation, which can do what they want with it. Michelle Dale, Greene County's Veteran Service Agency Director and Administrator of the American Legion Post 291's social media page, said someone apparently reported the Legion's account for violating what Facebook calls, and I quote, account integrity and authentic identity, end quote. Greene County Undersheriff Adam Bernard said they, and I quote, are currently appealing the removal based on what they can see. We have no violations, end quote. Facebook did not respond to questions from the newspaper. And you can read more about this story at Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and Philip Grant up in Rensselaer County and I are bringing you the WGXC Congressional Report, full of stories about what the candidates and representatives from the New York 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional districts have been up to this past week. Go to WGXC.org in the WGXC Newsroom for complete coverage of your congressional representative.
WRGB in Albany reports that Representative Paul Tonko held a listening session April 29th in the town of Milton in Saratoga County. Tonko wanted to hear residents' opinions on the new farm bill that is being negotiated this year. But the story does not quote any residents or their opinions, only Tonko. The 20th Congressional District Representative said, and I quote, food insecurity, the need to have food on the table, the importances of nutrition for our senior community and for sound development for our young people. So we need to emphasize this, especially because there were proposed restrictions and rollbacks in the bill recently done on the House floor in Washington. So it just alerts me to the wrongdoing in that bill and how it relates to agriculture and nutrition, end quote. Read more about this story at the WRGB website.
On April 27th, Democrat Pat Ryan voted with local Republicans Mark Molinaro and Elise Stefanik against, quote, directing the president to remove all United States armed forces other than the United States armed forces assigned to protect the United States Embassy from Somalia, unquote. Democrat Paul Tonko voted for the measure, which failed 102 to 321 in the House of Representatives. It was a rare bipartisan vote in Congress, with 52 Republicans and 50 Democrats voting for the measure, and 165 Republicans and 156 Democrats voting against.
Nancy Kern reports in Columbia Green Media that Representative Mark Molinaro, a Republican from Dutchess County, on April 29th voted against a bill to end a two-year moratorium on duties placed on imported cells and modules used on solar farms. Most Republicans voted for the bill, but it will not pass the Democrat-controlled Senate nor be signed by President Joe Biden. And it passed 221 to 202, which means Molinaro, breaking with his party, did not jeopardize the bill passing in the House of Representatives. Even though the vote was mostly theater, Molinaro said, and I quote, "Repealing this moratorium could force domestic companies, including those in New York's 19th congressional district, to pay over $1 billion in retroactive duties, eliminate thousands of domestic jobs, and cancel planned solar projects. I broke with my own party and voted against today's legislation because it would kneecap our advances in domestic solar energy and eliminate jobs in upstate New York," end quote. Judging from comments included in the story, Molinaro's vote won't be popular with local Republicans who seem opposed to solar power. Greene County Legislature Chair Patrick Linger, a Republican, said, and I quote, "I do not agree that it's used as a utility scale. I don't think that's the optimal use for solar," end quote. Athens Town Supervisor Michael Perrone said, and I quote, "I don't think I agree entirely with Molinaro because there may be a pilot involved with the project, which means that on a town level, the town does not get full taxation," end quote. Republican County Legislator Thomas Hobart from Coxsackie said, and I quote, "I don't see the residents of the region benefiting from the power that would be generated and would only experience the loss of open space," end quote. Molinaro represents the 19th Congressional District, though he lives in the 18th Congressional District. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. The Troy Record reports that Representative Paul Tonko introduced the New York-New Jersey Watershed Protection Act with New York Republican Representative Nicole Malliotakis to protect the Hudson, Mohawk, and Raritan Rivers and their tributaries. In the Senate, all four New York and New Jersey senators, Kirsten Gillibrand, Chuck Schumer, Cory Booker, and Bob Menendez, introduced the bill. Tonko said, and I quote, "For too long, our New York-New Jersey watershed has been grossly underfunded despite being America's most polluted watershed. I've long pushed to support this critical waterway, driving forward federal restoration efforts that will have massive ripple effects, including protecting communities from flood risk, supporting local wildlife, improving water quality, and driving economic growth," end quote. The bill would attempt to coordinate restoration efforts of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, improve water quality, increase public access to the watershed, mitigate flood risk, and provide $20 million annually for watershed restoration grants through fiscal year 2029. Read more about this story in the Troy Record.
Spectrum News reports that President Joe Biden will give a speech on the debt ceiling impasse in Congress on May 10th in the Hudson Valley. Biden seems to be targeting New York Republicans to persuade them to avoid default without conditions. Typically, Congress votes to raise the debt ceiling without limitations, but Republicans control the House of Representatives, but not the Senate and the presidency. They have been unable to pass any legislation, so they are holding the debt ceiling hostage to get some legislative measures they would like passed. Local Republican Representative Mark Molinaro, who lives in the 18th Congressional District but represents the 19th District, tried to persuade voters otherwise, releasing a statement that said, quote, "President Biden plans to leave negotiators behind in Washington and travel to the Hudson Valley to make a political speech," unquote. Read more about this story at Spectrum News. This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information.
Last week, Richard Crist of Nassau, New York, James R. Gordon of North Greenbush, and Leslie Wallace of Troy were arrested and arraigned on an indictment charging them with conspiring to violate the rights of Rensselaer County voters in connection with elections held in 2021. Christ is the director of operations for Rensselaer County. Gordon is the director of the Bureau for Central Services, and Wallace works for the Rensselaer County Executive's Office. In the indictment, the FBI alleges that during local elections held in 2021, Christ, Gordon, and Wallace conspired to use their official positions and actual and apparent authority over Rensselaer County employees to obtain absentee ballots in voters' names through fraud and intimidation. These voters did not intend to request absentee ballots, nor did they seek voting assistance from Christ, Gordon, or Wallace. The three indictees then conspired to cast false and illegal votes in these voters' names in the primary and general elections held in Rensselaer County in 2021. Their conduct violated the constitutional rights of Rensselaer County voters to have their votes counted equally as compared to votes cast by other voters, and made it more likely that the defendants' preferred candidates would win the elections. In the last year, Rensselaer County Election Commissioner James Schofield resigned as election chair before pleading guilty to similar voter fraud charges and faces up to 50 years in prison and fines of $250,000. Kimberly Ash Peterson, former Troy City Council member, also pleaded guilty and is facing up to 5 years in prison. Mary Sabo is a former city council member and 2023 candidate in East Greenbush.
So this is basically a broad-based conspiracy by those who are very high-level employees in county and operatives in the county government to commit fraud in the electoral process and to maintain power really at any and all costs. And we saw this in the 2001 election that I ran in, where in my small town of then 10,000 folks, the Republicans put up essentially fake candidates. People, in one case, one of the women did not even know she was running to run on the working families line in order to siphon votes away from Democrats. And failing to do that, they then turned to absentee ballot fraud.
So, like, the concrete thing that they did here is fill out fake absentee ballots in order to cast votes?
It is my understanding that they looked for voters, perhaps who were not active voters, and they requested absentee ballots in their name and then filled them out. And in some cases, these folks may have been county employees, so they pressured them to vote or to fill out absentee ballots.
Anita Thayer is on the executive committee of the New York Working Families Party and the former chair of the Capital District chapter. She explained to me how the Rensselaer County Republican Committee has been manipulating the working family ballot line in the past few elections and why it matters.
The Republican Party in Rensselaer County is desperate to hold on to power. And if they played by the rules, that probably would be a blue county because of changing demographics and changing attitudes of the residents of Rensselaer County. So they think that the only way they can retain power is by making sure they have access to a ballot line for additional votes, or they want to make sure the Democratic Party doesn't have the right to place any of its people on the Working Families Party line. So if you play by the rules, the way a candidate gets on the Working Families Party line is that you have an interview with local members of the Working Families Party, and they make a recommendation as to whether or not a particular candidate is aligned with the values of the Working Families Party. They make a recommendation that eventually it's the executive committee, the officers committee of the Working Families Party, that gives them, if they're registered to a different party, permission to run and appear on the Working Families Party line. Historically, it was easier for candidates that were not aligned with us to use the New York State election law to petition to be on the Working Families Party line. But recently, the law has changed, so if you don't get permission from the Working Families Party, you have to be a registrant of the Working Families Party. So what happened 2 years ago is that the Rensselaer County Republican Party decided they're going to register a lot of their people in the Working Families Party, run candidates in that, in our party, and then try to block the candidates that we chose to appear on our line. You don't need to show that you're committed to our values or our principles or our program of action, and you can, you know, without really sharing our ideals, you can get yourself on the ballot line.
They were putting people on the line that really weren't running much of a campaign. So the point was more to confuse voters that would be voting against them than it was to gain votes for their candidates. Right.
Right? It was to keep the Democrats from winning, because in many cases we chose to endorse Democratic candidates because they shared our values, and that would have given them an opportunity to, you know, present themselves as a Democratic and Working Families Party candidate, and they wanted to block that. And in a county like Rensselaer County, where the registration between Republicans and Democrats is closely divided, it makes a difference for a candidate if you can appear on a third party line.
And that's, I guess that's the answer similarly to, like, it could make a difference if you could submit enough, you know, fake absentee ballots as well, huh?
Right. I mean, if they played by the rules, the Republican parties wouldn't hold power in Rensselaer County. They chose to resort to intimidation and badgering. Folks that work for Rensselaer County are threatened with a job loss, you know, either explicitly or implicitly. They're threatened with losing some status if they don't cooperate with these schemes of the Republican Party. This is a problem. You know, there's many reasons people become cynical and choose not to engage in the voting process, but it doesn't help when you have the leadership of a major party, you know, as alleged by the feds here, committing crimes of intimidation.
In 2021, Democrat Cheryl Kennedy lost the general election in the Troy City Council's 6th District by 10 votes to Republican Irene Sorrento. Election officials say that James Schofield personally processed about 12 absentee ballots in that race. Mary Sabo explains why she thinks this case is so important for Rensselaer County voters.
But I think it definitely affects everyone in the county, because Rensselaer County voters are entitled to fair and free elections. And if we can't have faith in the electoral process, then how can we have faith that the county government, in fact, is operating above board in other areas? If they're willing to lie about absentee ballots, then maybe they're lying about being bribed for contracts. We just will never know. And the other thing that's perfectly really disturbing is that we may never know who won the elections in 2021. It is kind of funny that a lot of Republicans are always accusing Democrats of fraud and looking back at the 2020 presidential election and questioning the results there. But here in Rensselaer County, I may be one of the few candidates whose election was actually affected by voter fraud, because we have these operatives and these county employees who've been arrested for very serious crimes.
What would you like to see happen going forward?
I'd like to just see the judicial process play out, and I hope that we will learn more about what happens as time goes on.
When's the election for you for city council?
It will be, well, so I was endorsed by the Democrat. I am a Democrat, and I also have the Working Families Party endorsement. And perhaps due to this ongoing investigation this year, they did not try to run a fake candidate in a primary against me. So I'll be facing the voters on November 7th in the fall.
The Rensselaer County GOP and the North Greenbush Republican Committee both declined to comment for this story. Reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Moses Nagel.
Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Host Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, I'm Tim Kennelty.
Hi, I'm Jean Thomas.
And welcome to another edition of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We have an exciting guest today, one of our favorite people, right? Joe Bain from Bain's Best Perennials.
He's a wholesale grower, so you can't go to his place, but you can go to any of the retailers that he supplies.
And it's the perfect time of year because it's officially spring, right?
Yay.
It's officially spring. So we're really going to start thinking about planting perennials. Yeah, Joe is really a perennial expert, so we're going to talk to him all about his favorites and how he grows them and what's really a durable perennial and native perennials and all of that good stuff.
Joe knows more than anybody I know about perennials. In fact, he's even taught some of the Master Gardener classes and is always very generous to the Master Gardeners. We're here with Joe Bain, owner of Bain's Best Perennials, a wholesale perennial plant nursery in Malden Bridge in Columbia County. Joe's been very generous with the Master Gardener volunteer program over the years. He's taught classes on perennials to the trainees, and he's sold us plants at wholesale prices for our plant sales and even donated plants from time to time. Welcome, Joe. It's a pleasure to spend some time with you. Thanks for coming in to help us learn more about perennials. Let's start with a little history. You started your nursery in Malden Bridge in 1988, is that right?
That's right.
Okay,
tell us
a little about yourself and the nursery.
Well, thank you for having me. I actually grew up in the agricultural business. My family, George and Louise, and my sister Nancy and I bought a dairy farm in Malden Bridge, which is really where the nursery still exists, back in 1963. So I was raised in agriculture and saw everybody get their feet on the floor at 5:30 in the morning to do milking and all that stuff. And so they milked the farm from 63 to July of 69, and they sold the farm off on that side of the street, and we moved over to what would be the eastern side of Route 66, and that's where my nursery is today. But, yeah, so just lots of livestock and agriculture, and then I slid over into the plant business, which is a little bit more easily maintained than livestock.
Why did you choose perennials?
Perennials have always been kind of suited to my personality, busy in the spring, summer, and the fall, and then completely relaxed for the winter. That lifestyle was kind of my lifestyle. And then as you study plants, trees, shrubs, lichens, whatever it might be, you realize that, oh, these plants are beautiful, and they're completely in sync with my own life.
Yeah. I'm happy it's a beauty thing, Joe, and it's not just about your lifestyle. You would have, like, feet of clay. I would have been upset with you.
It definitely is a beauty thing. There's no question.
But it's a wholesale business. You don't sell retail, right?
Exactly right. We're wholesale, so we're farm to the landscape trade, who then install into homeowners.
So you're usually dealing with landscape designers and people
exactly.
like that?
Exactly, yep. Extensive plant lists. People come and pick up with the trailers and trucks.
So when I come into your nursery, there's so many perennials. How many perennials do you have that you usually grow?
I think right now we're about 480 types, and the normal inventory runs somewhere between 21,000 and 28,000.
Wow, that's amazing.
And it's interesting that the sales and the production basically are almost the same, so that number actually never changes.
Oh.
We don't ever plummet down to real low or extremely high. It's this is natural balance that...
But there's times that certain plants are available